From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump is set to authorize hefty tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. Despite strong criticism from political allies and business executives, the president is expected to levy 25% fees on steel and 10% on aluminum as early as Thursday. His spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Wednesday said exceptions are possible.
That would be a case-by-case and country-by-country basis, but it would be determined whether or not there is a national security exemption.
The tariff threat has raised alarm bells about a global trade war. In Luxembourg, European Council President Donald Tusk counseled against tariffs.
Trade wars are bad and easy to lose. For this reason, I strongly believe that now is the time for politicians on both sides of the Atlantic to act responsibly.
Trade warriors' fears have rattled global markets, the benchmark U.S. Dow Jones falling on Wednesday. Mr. Trump also tweeted Wednesday that China has been asked to develop a plan for a $1 billion cut in its trade surplus with the U.S. Again, White House spokesperson Sanders.
The president's been clear that he wants to address the trade imbalances and the unfair practices. And certainly we would take anything into consideration. But as of right now, we're moving fully ahead. And anything that would change would be done so on a national security basis.
Meanwhile, the U.S. trade deficit ballooned in January. The U.N. envoy to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Leila Zerugi, Wednesday warned of the risk of violence ahead of long-delayed elections. She briefed the Security Council.
In the context of the political tensions and the deteriorating security situation, the DRC continues to face one of the world's most serious humanitarian crises.
She said more than 4 million people are in need of aid. This is VOA News. The relentless Syrian bombardment of the rebel-held region Eastern Ghouta has been accompanied by a ground assault that, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, appears to have the objective of cutting the enclave in two. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal said absent serious opposition, the Assad regime now has a free hand.
The government is in a dominant position. Civil war, as we knew, is basically over. And they are now moving in quickly to reassert control before the rebel forces, especially the Jaish al-Islam and al-Qaeda, can regroup themselves.
Nearly 900 civilians have been killed since pro-government forces began the assault February 18th on the besieged region. At the UN, the Security Council called for its February 24 resolution demanding a 30-day ceasefire to be fully implemented. Carol Van Oostrom is the current council president.
The Security Council reiterated its call for implementation of Resolution 2401. And coming Monday, March the 12th, the Security Council will be briefed by the Secretary General on the implementation of Resolution 2401.
A rebel defeat in Eastern Ghouta will be the opposition's biggest setback since the fall of Aleppo in late December 2016. A top British counter-terror official Wednesday said a nerve agent was used against a former Russian double agent Sunday in the southern city Salisbury. Sergei Skripal, once a high-ranking officer in Russia's military intelligence service, and his daughter are reported to be in critical condition. Two South Korean envoys are due in Washington Thursday to meet National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster about the 2 days of meetings with North Korean officials, including leader Kim Jong-un, which both Koreas agreed to a summit, while Pyongyang proposed talks with the U.S. Wednesday, former Ambassador Christopher Hill told Reuters he opposes any premature lifting of sanctions against Pyongyang.
My own advice would be that we should not go there, and what we should do is see whether they have an interest in putting their nuclear weapons on the bargaining table or not.
Hill cautioned the Trump administration should coordinate any talks on denuclearization with China. In central Nigeria, more than 20 have died in clashes between mostly Muslim herders and predominantly Christian farmers. After one of two missing herders was found dead, a group armed with machetes attacked people in Benue State. The U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum Wednesday rescinded its top award to Myanmar de facto leader, Nobel laureate Aung San Suu Kyi, over her failure to stem the crackdown on Rohingya Muslims. The museum said she and her National League for Democracy have refused to cooperate with the UN, tolerated hate attacks on Rohingya, and denied reporters access to regions to check abuse. Saudi Arabia Wednesday gave approval to Air India for overflight rights for flights from New Delhi to Tel Aviv, ending a 70-year ban. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barta in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting is underway in Wednesday's Sierra Leone presidential election, but the main opposition is fuming about an incident.
I got a call from the SLPP admin who told me that the premises of the presidential candidate of the SLPP, Richard Belida Julius Madabi, was under police conduct. The police were armed. They said they have gotten an intelligence of something of police interest in the private premises of Richard Belida Julius Madabi.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party. U.S. Immigration Wednesday deported a large number of Gambians living illegally in the United States, and Ugandan women want improvement in their security and safety on this International Women's Day today.
We're celebrating with heavy hearts. When we sit back and reflect how our sisters died in cold blood, innocently killed, and justice has not been found or done, the families have not got assistance, orphans have been left behind.
Rita Achiro is the executive director of the Uganda Women Network. The first and current woman president of the Law Association of Zambia says there's a need for more women in leadership positions. Burundian women remain victims of human trafficking, and an operation to resettle African refugees in Niger is suspended. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting in Wednesday's Sierra Leone presidential election has begun at polling stations across the country. The National Electoral Commission has appealed to the citizens to be patient in waiting for the official results, which the commission said will take several days to tally. In another development, there was a police incident at the home of the Sierra Leone People's Party SLPP candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Madabio. Here is Lahai Lawrence Lima, the National Publicity Secretary of the SLPP, to explain.
I got a call from the SLPP admin who told me that the premises of the presidential candidate of the SLPP, Richard Brigadier Julius Madabio, was under police conduct. So I rushed here, I met police and military personnel on the streets. The police were armed. They were trying to force their way into the private premise of Richard Brigadier Julius Madabio, who said no. I cannot allow or let in any security personnel without what. And so they came without warrant. They said they have gotten an intelligence of something of police interest in the private premises of Retired Brigadier Julius Madabio. He said, if you come with warrant, I will let you in. But they were without warrant, and so they left. Shortly when they left, the next moment we saw them with huge reinforcement trying to get their way in. And so civilians within the surrounding environment came out and said, no, you will not enter this place. And so there was a standoff between the civilians and the police who were trying to force their way in. And then, fortunately, we had President Mahama, former president of Ghana, who is the head of the ECOWAS Commonwealth, and other international observers, including the Nigeria former president, Goodluck Jonathan, who came in, including the police senior officer, AIG, who entered the situation room of the SLPP to be able to go through what we have there. So when they entered the office of Richard Brigadier Julius Madabio, all they could find were computers and phones, which we have set up with a lot of system with our agents across the country, and so the left. So the retired brigadier has actually called on the president to be responsible and also have a responsible government to conduct a responsible election, which results can be accepted by all. And the SLPP reiterated its position that we will not accept any result of the rigged elections.
Now, you said that your party, the SLPP, had nothing illegal except that you installed some equipment to monitor the results. Yes. Why did the police find the need to come to inspect Madabio's home? Did they do this with other candidates?
What is clear is the fact that the APC themselves, they have their own situation room that is headed by the defense minister. We've got intelligence on that. The National Elections Watch have their own situation room. And as much as the APC have deployed agents right across the country, but because the APC have a dubious or manipulative scheme, they have actually embarked on such move, one, to either distract us or distract the public from what is going on the polling centers, especially when at the time the bench of such perpetration is the time exactly that we were expecting counting to have started.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. VOA made numerous attempts to contact the Sierra Leone National Police for their response. One superintendent said he had limited information about the incident because he was not on the spot when it happened. Today is International Women's Day, dedicated to celebrate the achievements of women worldwide and to seek solutions for the challenges facing women. Women in Uganda are using the day to call on the government to improve their security and safety. They say only then will they be able to contribute to national development. Rita Achiro, the executive director of the Uganda Women Network, says it is the government's responsibility to make sure women and all other citizens live in a secure society. Mugumi Davis-Brackeridge reports from Kampala.
25-year-old Prudence Nyamishana, a blogger and ICT consultant in Kampala, used to wake up early at 5 a.m. and go to work. She also says she would spend many hours at work and come back home late. Now, Nyamishana says she cannot contemplate working until midnight.
I'm scared. I have to put, like, I don't know how many padlocks on my door. So many. We have to, me and my neighbors, we've hired Naskari with a gun to protect us. Because we have single women we have in our compound, so we have to make sure that the women are safe.
Goretti Zavuga, the executive director of Uganda Women Network, an NGO that uses information and technology to promote the rights of women and children, worries such could be how other women in Kampala and in Uganda feel as they go about their day-to-day activities.
I must say that I feel trouble at night. Some business run up to midnight. You cannot do it. You may not be able to move as you move. You are not, basically, you're not secure. Even when women are driving, they are not secure.
Dozens of women have been kidnapped and even killed in and around Kampala in recent weeks. International Women's Day is a global celebration of the social, economic, cultural and political achievements of women, as well as a call for solutions to challenges facing them. This year's theme is Press for Progress, a call for everyone to act and be gender inclusive. Rita Achiro, the executive director of Uganda Women Network, a coalition of women rights organizations in Uganda, agrees.
We're celebrating with heavy hearts. When we sit back and reflect how our sisters died in cold blood, innocently killed, and justice has not been found or done, the families have not got assistance, orphans have been left behind. The manner in which these women are killed leaves a lot to be desired with our security organs and the security system in this country.
Police spokesman Emiliani Kaima says the Uganda police is doing all it can to ensure women just like any Ugandans have security in their daily lives.
We have a whole department of child and family that looks at largely emotional related issues, issues of family, issues of children, and on general crime like women being murdered, targeted.
Kaima says many suspected offenders have been arrested and be brought before the courts of law for judgment. But Achilo insists the police should stop the talking and ensure people's lives are safe. She also says the government must cut down on other marriage practices in the country.
We are seeing our own parents marrying off young girls. Girls as young as 11 years having babies. Government has the duty and the responsibility to protect every child in this country.
Women in Uganda also want the government to introduce laws that grant them equal rights to properties, especially land. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The first and current woman president of the Law Association of Zambia says there is a need for more women to take up leadership positions. Linda Kasonda says women are capable and get things done most of the time. She also says women are consultative. But Kasonda warns that women seeking leadership positions must be prepared for a lot of criticism, sexual objectification, and even threats to their safety. On this International Women's Day, Kasonda has written an article on why there's a need for more women in leadership position.
Well, I think it's important because women bring a different perspective to the table. Women are generally more collaborative. They sort of cross party lines in the case of political leadership. And also, I find that they're a bit more consultative.
What has it been for you? You being the first woman president of the Law Association of Zambia.
Well, firstly, I'd like to say that it's been a real honor. Being the first has meant that I've had to set an example for anybody that's coming after me. It's been a very challenging time, but I think it's fair to say that I've risen to the occasion, and I hope that many other women can see themselves in me going forward. I've come across a lot of videos recently citing Roger Bannister and the 4-minute mile, that until Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, nobody thought it was possible. But once the doors were open,
several people followed through, and I hope that that's the case in my case.
You say here, well, one aspect of women in leadership that is often spoken about is how people relate to women in leadership. How have people related to you, in a negative way or positively?
Well, I think when I got into office, no one really knew what to expect. People were very happy that I had achieved this milestone, that I was the first. But no one really expected much more than that. And I think through my example, I think I've been an advocate for civil rights, for the rule of law, constitutionalism, good governance, and social justice. And I think I'd like to believe that I have set an example that even men would want to follow. In terms of how people relate to women in leadership, I think when I first got into office, as I said, people didn't know what to expect and expected very little of me. So I saw a lot of unconscious bias exhibited. And I mentioned, for example, that in my election campaign, I had a question by a female lawyer who asked me what I had done. And I listed all the things I had done. And she said, what else? So in my article, I made the point that women, the bar is set much higher for women. People demand more of them than they do men.
Linda, you said in your article, for us women to succeed, we must be able to embrace the ambition and success of other women. Do you have any kind of woman role model? Who is your role model?
Well, my personal role models are Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, and Tuli Madonsela, who is the former public protector of South Africa.
Beyond you being president of the Law Association of Zambia, are you planning to be in politics in Zambia?
I have no plans of being in politics in Zambia. I think there are many ways in which you can serve your country, and I believe that serving under the Law Association of Zambia has been one of them, and I hope that I'll continue to contribute to the development of this nation.
So this being International Women's Day, what advice do you have now for other women? What's the final words from you to other women in Africa?
I think first and foremost is to believe in yourself. Don't wait for someone else to give you power. Take it.
Linda, yes. It's so nice to talk with you, and happy International Women's Day.
Thank you very much. You have a good day.
Linda Kasonda is the first and current woman president of the Law Association of Zambia. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 8th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was welcomed to Ethiopia on Wednesday on the red carpet by Foreign Minister Wagner Gebreyehu on the first step of his official visit to Africa. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is also visiting Ethiopia Wednesday, but there has been no confirmation the two diplomats will meet. Women have remained victims of human trafficking in Burundi. According to a local non-governmental organization, at least 527 girls and women were trafficked to Asian countries in 2017. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
Despite government efforts to curb the illegal activity of trafficking humans in the country, the activity have continued to strive 3 years on, after the political crisis erupted when incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza publicly announced he could seek another term in the office. 80% of the youth in Burundi remain unemployed, leaving them with no option but to venture for a better living. Prim Barubukeye is the chairman of the local NGO that fights against transnational crime.
Bamushikanye mu gihugu cha Tanzania canke muri Kenya.
He says that when women are trafficked to Kenya or Tanzania, where they wait to board planes to Asian countries, traffickers are paid between 1,000 to 1,300 per person trafficked. He calls on the government to enforce the laws in order to put an end to the practice. Last year, I interviewed a 29-year-old Timothy Niyonguru, whose wife was among the 14 women intercepted by the Burundi police while being trafficked to Oman in December 2017. He said that his wife left for Oman last month despite efforts to stop her from leaving.
Living under unfamiliar conditions is really a great challenge. It is an unexpected challenge that I'm coping with today. Taking off my kids, running up and down. Really, it's a difficult moment that I'm facing too. But I expect that, God willing, I will see her someday because she's my wife and I still love her. Although these things happen, but I hope that there is a day maybe when I will see back home.
As poverty rate was recorded at 70% by the World Bank, majority of Burundians who end up being trafficked to Asian countries say that poverty is the main cause for leaving the country. Martin Nivyabandi is the Burundi Human Rights Minister.
The government of Burundi is concerned about human trafficking, and we have the legal framework to fight against this phenomenon. But unfortunately, as you know, poverty is the main cause of this phenomenon. And we're trying to reduce the poverty and sometimes people.
As Burundi unemployment rate is still high and the government still struggling to stabilize the economy, Burundian women are still willing to venture for a better life who at the end fall in the hands of the traffickers. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
There's been a mass deportation of Gambian immigrants living in the United States illegally. As VOA's Pandere Umbaya reports, West African nationals, including dozens of Gambians, were on Wednesday placed on a special charter flight from the United States and deported to their native countries.
It has been a difficult moment for the Gambian community in the United States, especially those living here illegally. Close to 45 Gambian deportees from the U.S. arrived at the Banjul International Airport on Wednesday. Some of the deportees have been living in the U.S. for over 20 years. Some left their children, personal belongings, and savings behind. The deportees arrived home barely empty-handed. Pa Samba Jau is a Gambian human rights activist based in Washington, D.C.
It's absolutely sad that people who have lived in this country for decades, people who have lived as very responsible people who paid taxes, worked, built their families and everything, to be just uprooted from here and taken back to a place that they've been removed from for so long. It is really, really sad. And I believe that it is important for the United States government to understand that it cannot just continue deporting people willy-nilly like that. You know, there should be ways to compassion.
In a campaign promise leading to the past American elections, President Donald Trump said the U.S. is going to be out of reach for criminal illegal aliens.
Going out, they're going out fast. Moving forward, we will issue detainers for illegal immigrants who are arrested for any crime whatsoever, and they will be placed into immediate removal proceedings if we even have to do that. We will terminate the Obama administration's deadly, and it is deadly, non-enforcement policies.
The Gambian government has been cooperating with the Trump administration to facilitate the deportations. Emergency passports are being issued to immigrants lined up to be deported through the Gambian embassy in Washington, D.C. Countries which refuse to cooperate with the U.S. government to facilitate the deportations are usually slammed with sanctions. This includes denial of U.S. visa to foreign government officials and funding. The former Jammeh administration was sanctioned for refusing to accept over 2,000 Gambian deportees from the U.S. The sanctions were lifted when President Adama Barrow came to power. Pa Samba Jau believes that illegal aliens with clean bill of criminal history should be spared from deportation.
Well, I want to just appeal to the U.S. government to understand that Gambians generally are law-abiding citizens. Most immigrants who come to this country work their butt off to feed their families and to contribute towards the U.S. economy. These are not criminals. And regularizing their status here is not going to take anything away from this country. This idea of just deporting people just because you want to look good, because it is popular in some corners, I think it's counterproductive. America is a country of immigrants.
Omar Ba is the executive director of the Rhode Island-based Refugee Dream Center.
Personally, what we always advise them at the center is to be extra cautious. This is not a normal situation any longer. We have a government that is not only putting in place bad immigration-related policies, but they are pursuing people. They are going after people. They are going to 7-Eleven gas stations, going to courthouses at the gates, capturing people. Literally, it's a hunting spree.
Mr. Barr called on immigrants to be law-abiding and stay away from criminal behavior. A diplomat at the Gambian Embassy in Washington, D.C., was contacted for comment by the VOA, but he said he was busy attending to other matters. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandere Mbai reporting.
The UN Refugee Agency says it has been forced to temporarily suspend an operation to resettle African refugees evacuated from Libya to Niger because too few countries have agreed to accept them. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In November, Niger agreed to accept, on a transit basis, Africans evacuated by the UN Refugee Agency from Libya for resettlement in third countries. The UNHCR says it has managed to evacuate 1,400 from Libya since December. The African refugees had been held under terrible conditions in detention centers run by the Libyan government of national accord. Vincent Cochetel is UNHCR's special envoy for the Central Mediterranean situation. He says the UNHCR would like to evacuate more people from Libya, but the government of Niger has suspended the operation because there are too few resettlement departures. For now, Cochetel says the UNHCR has no solution to this problem because only 30 resettlement locations are available. He says that is not enough.
So we've been calling on resettlement states to do more, to evacuate very quickly the thousands of people that have gone to Niger, because unless we have this space, people will have to continue to rot in appalling condition in detention center. We have no other solution available to us.
Hundreds of thousands of migrants from sub-Saharan Africa make the dangerous trek to Libya in hopes of reaching Europe and a better life. Currently, the UN Migration Agency estimates more than 700,000 migrants, including at least 47,000 refugees in need of protection, are in Libya. Many never make it to Italy, the main port of call, because they are held in detention centers run by Libyan authorities or by smugglers and human traffickers who kidnap and torture migrants for ransom. The UNHCR is appealing for nearly $227 million for humanitarian operations in the Central Mediterranean this year. Cochetel says some of the funds could be used to try to deter refugees from making the desperate journey to Libya by offering alternate options for asylum in countries they pass through en route to Libya. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Vote counting Wednesday's Sierra Leone presidential election has begun at polling stations across the country. The National Electoral Commission has appealed to the citizens to be patient in waiting for the official results, which the commission said will take several days to tally. In another development, there was a police incident at the home of the Sierra Leone People's Party SLPP candidate, retired Brigadier Julius Madabiu. A roadside bomb struck a car Wednesday southwest of the Somali capital, Mogadishu, killing two government officials and two of their bodyguards. Regional officials said the blast occurred on the main tarmac road linking Mogadishu to southwestern regions near Afgoya, about 40 kilometers southwest of the capital, villagers told VOA. The state minister for security of the southwest region state and a state lawmaker from Hashbella region state and two of their guards were killed in the attack. The reported death of an Eritrean political prisoner has shone a spotlight on the country's secret prison system, where some of the nation's founders have been held without trial for more than 16 years. And that is it for this Thursday, March 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very, very good day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA, VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.